The problem that's happened to the South Sudanese economy really since the beginning of the civil war in 2013 has been a total collapse of the payment of wages. So the government really doesn't pay wages or provide services in the country, and those wages it does provide are woefully inadequate. So I was just in Yambio, and I was talking to a policeman, and that policeman earned the equivalent of $4 a month. And we went to the market together, and I asked one of the butchers how much a kilo of meat costs, and he said $4 a month. So wages have not kept apace with rampant inflation, even those wages that are paid, and those wages are only paid every 2 months or every 3 months. They're always paid late. That isn't about government scarcity. That was a government decision, a tactical decision to undermine the salaried class of government workers around the country, because it was easier for them to favor political figures through favors and through effectively giving licenses to different county commissioners in order to tax populations under their control. So we saw a shift. It's one of the major things the paper argues, from an economy in which the government provided wages to pay off the political class to one in which it's collapsed the wage structure, leading to really general immiseration through the country, and instead supports chosen politicians and military commanders through the paying of favors or through the paying of private money directly from the office of the president. The government itself has increasingly privatized the state.
You argue in the paper that serves, while it immiserates the general population, it serves the political elite around President Kiir.
That's right, Nabil. So what's happened is, while the population has increasingly become poorer, more dependent on humanitarian aid, what Salva's tried to do, President Salva Kiir, has to keep all the power effectively to him and to a narrow coterie, a narrow group of supporters that he has within the office of the president. And so what it's actually looked like on the ground is that both money and power are more and more centralized in Juba. And the way that Juba, the way that Kiir's regime prevents the emergence of an opposition is by fragmenting and setting against each other different political forces in the rest of the country. So you get this paradoxical development where there's a bigger centralization of power and a bigger centralization of money in Salva's hands, but there's more fragmentation and more conflict in the rest of the country.
You examine three areas where you argue an elite group around President Kiir diverts resources to their benefits: oil, humanitarianism, and loans from financial institutions. Can you explain in simple terms how they do that?
For the international financial institutions, there's been a series of loans called RCF loans from the International Monetary Fund that began during COVID. Now, of those loans, only 70% of them are actually accounted for. 30% just vanished. And we're talking about each time $250 million. Even for the money that is received and accounted for, a lot of it overwhelmingly goes to Kiir's supporters rather than the opposition. So if you look at the money used to pay soldiers' salaries, it went to Division 11, and it went to divisions in Warap and in Northern Barkhazal, rather than going, for instance, to more opposition-dominated divisions, such as Division 4 in Bentiu. So all of the money was selectively used to pay off government supporters, not opposition supporters, actually increasing fractures. And one of the things that money was used to pay was NSS salaries, National Security Service salaries, at a time when the NSS was actively abducting people in foreign countries, like in Kenya. So that's the International Monetary Fund. The humanitarian system is subject to diversion across the country and in all sorts of ways. So if you think about, you know, you're running a big aid agency in Juba and you have to rent a compound, who are you renting from? Almost 100% you're going to be renting from someone who has connections to the government. That money is going to Kiir's regime. Then you're going to try to get your aid supplies, your humanitarian supplies, from Juba, say, to Bentiu. At every point, you're paying checkpoints. Those checkpoints are going to SSPDF commanders or, more rarely, IO commanders. Then your aid is on the ground. Who is the aid going to be delivered to? Well, in Bentiu, it's going to be delivered to groups that are favored by Nwantiel, the governor, rather than favored by the opposition. So at every stage, humanitarian aid is diverted by the government and pressed into use to serve political purposes. And then with the oil revenue, despite multiple claims to the contrary, there's still no real payment into a single oil account. So at every stage of this process, oil money is diverted by national security, by holding companies. And this the aim of Kier's regime is to get this money off the books, to obfuscate where it comes from, to hide where it comes from, so it can go directly into the pockets of Kier and his associates and be used to pay off commanders and other politicians. And the biggest way that this happens is via the Oil for Foods program, the Oil for Roads program. The Oil for Roads program itself constitutes now the major source, the major expenditure of state income outside of the wage structure in the office of the president. It goes into the hands of companies linked to Kier's associates, and then it vanishes. And often roads are not built.